everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. Tom, happy Earth Day to you.
I'm happy to be on Earth this day.
We are all happy to be on Earth on this Earth Day, which is Friday, April 22nd, 2022. Our radio station, KVOI 1030. Tucson's voice for news and talk. We are in our 12th year with the radio program and 34th year in TV and radio here in Tucson. Worldwide live listening and podcasts on my show, where we have everything available for you, taking the live feed from KVOI.com. It's BuckmasterShow.com, where we have podcasts and our show archive, really going back to pretty much every show we have done since we began the radio project in January of 2011. Buckmaster's Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners like to do our Friday shout-out, TucsonSentinel.com. The editor and publisher is with us in studio today, Mr. Dylan Smith. Hey, Dylan, how's your week been so far?
You know, pretty busy, but I guess that's not a bad thing.
No, not a bad thing.
There's plenty of news out there.
There is plenty of news, and you and the gang at Tucson Sentinel are bringing it to all of us online. The Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Dan Shear and his team down there, we thank them for their support. Tucson Local Media Group, they've been a big supporter, putting the Buckmaster Show logo and link on all of their publications, which include the Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today features Tucson's new police chief, Chad Kazmar. Chad Kazmar was sworn in, well, I guess he's still relatively new, he was sworn in as the city's top cop back on December 7th of last year, the same day that former TPD chief Chris Magnus became chief of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the 44-year-old Tucson native. Chief Kazmar has worked in just about every department, pretty much, right, Chief?
It certainly feels that way.
It feels that way, right, over the 21 years on the force. And that included the 21 years working kind of on loan over with 911 to sort of look at some of the problems over there and institute maybe some best practices and move that whole operation forward.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. I spent the year last year down at the Public Safety Communications Department, and it was a project that I started as the deputy chief under Chris Magnus. And then I had the opportunity to go back and actually be the interim director and finish some work that I had started that really didn't fully, you know, be deployed. And so it was great to go back and take some ownership of that.
Well, we are delighted to have you on the program. Welcome. I want to get kind of the overview. Where are we right now with TPD in your staffing situation, Chief?
So we're authorized about 1,200 staff members. That's both commissioned and professional staff. And one
you wish you had that many, right?
Yeah, I wish I probably had about 1,500.
Yeah.
But wishing isn't going to help, no. You know, some of the challenges that we have. So we're at about 1,000 personnel right now. We're down about 135 police officers, but we have about 70 in training. But it's really at a time where we celebrate all hands on deck, every person matters, and so our professional staff are just as critical as our commission right now.
And I saw something I haven't seen in a long time. I want to say at least a year. On Al Vernon by Grant, on my way into KVOI to the station today, I actually saw two TPD motorcycle police officers with radar guns.
You did. You certainly did. Yeah, we're, you know, when
luckily I was going the speed limit.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask you, Bill, how your interaction went with
I did not get that close.
Was that a warning or was that an actual ticket there?
No, yeah, no, but it was good to see them.
Well, I'm glad that you were hands-free and behaving yourself with your speeds. But yeah, one of the things, Bill, I looked at when I came back was our driving behavior in this community and almost a record high last year of 88 fatalities, only to the 89 being a record. And we're trending even higher this year at 33 fatalities. We had another pedestrian fatality last night. So while enforcement is just a small component of safe streets, the executive leadership team and I put reassembled and constituted our motor. So we have 20 of those positions. We have 19 of those folks filled. And you're going to see them out in the community making sure our drivers are safe.
Most of those fatalities are the people not, are the victims not within a crosswalk. Do you happen to know kind of how that plays out?
There's a very high percentage of when we have a pedestrian death that they're not, most often they're not in a crosswalk. There certainly, we have had some cases last year where they were. What I would recommend are folks who enjoy walking around town and use that as their primary form of getting from place A to B is, you might have the right of way, but it's always good to not have earbuds in and be staring at your phone, which is if you're driving out there today and you start looking around, I bet 9 out of 10 folks are going to be staring down at their phone and not looking where they're walking. But sometimes vehicles aren't going to yield your authorized right of way and the consequences can be fatal.
Here's Dylan Smith.
So you mentioned we're down about 150 officers from what you have authorized. How many cops do we have right now?
So we have 875 authorized, and we're down 135.
So 700.
Yeah, we're float around, yeah, just above, depending on the day of who's injured or coming in, yeah. In that 7 to 725.
And you have 70 being trained right now. So
we do.
How many are going to be leaving while you're trying to bring more people in? Because that's kind of, that turnover right now is kind of the problem. You have so many officers who are retiring, leaving, that it's not a matter of you bring 70 on and you're 70 up, right?
You're right, Dylan. So last year we had 99 officers leave the department. Only 42 of those folks retired. A lot of people decided that they were no longer interested in the profession. And that's certainly step one is, and my responsibility as chief is getting my arms wrapped around the attrition. So an attrition rate of 8 to 9 a month is just not sustainable. Even though I have my own police academy and I train in a regional approach, if I'm generating 75 officers and 50 of those stay and I'm attriting at 9, it's simple math. So we started the year at 40 less officers than we did the year before. And that just can't continue to happen.
In the exit interviews that you do with the officers that say they are done, what were some of their reasons?
I think it's really complicated. I think there's obviously post George Floyd. I think the pandemic, while you know everybody struggled the last 2 years with figuring out what our new life looked like, our your public safety personnel, your nurses, you know other environmental folks who are out picking up your trash and reading your meters. And there's a lot of people who didn't get the benefit of staying at home with their loved ones. And that created additional stress. And it's certainly the increasing expectations of police officers and body-worn cameras and expecting perfection. And hopefully we can spend a little time talking about that today, what the academy experience looks like before we deploy these young men and women to do a very difficult job.
Wearing a body cam all day, that's a different... most of us, if we had to wear a camera kind of monitoring our activities, it'd be kind of weird.
You know, we certainly should never be desensitized to what that means because most of us don't wear a camera. Surgeons don't wear cameras. Pilots don't wear cameras. Where there's some really critical consequences if the bad wrong decisions are made, we don't have that same opportunity to review that behavior. And what I would say to you is, and I was speaking to a business community group, a bunch of businesses within our community, and I asked the room. I said, you know, and how long that in their trades, their crafts, folks got training in, from air conditioning installers to plumbers to painters to you name it. You're talking 2 to 4 years of a certification process. And one thing I love to talk about is to really recognize that there's Arizona Post requirements of a basic academy, which is 4 months long, and we can add to that. But effectively, your police officers across the country and in this state are getting 9 months of training. They're learning constitutional law, Arizona law, use of force, how to drive. Some of these folks haven't been driving for more than a year or two. Many of them have never been in a physical confrontation. And so after 9 months of academic and field training, we strap a camera on their chest and we go out, we send them out and we say, you know, okay, now start filling that toolbox with on the job experience. And there's just not a lot of tolerance for mistakes or human beings to be human.
Dylan?
I want to quickly touch on, you mentioned the increasing number of traffic deaths. It seems especially pedestrian deaths are basically off the charts. I think with the most recent one last night, we have 17 so far year to date this year. Last year, which was a pretty deadly year on our streets, at this point we had 10 pedestrian deaths.
Yes.
What's going on out there?
Great question, Dylan. There's a couple, I think, contributing factors. First, we're in good company. Most of the country's struggling with this very issue. Cars have gotten faster. They've technology has increased, distractions have increased. Although we have hands-free, many, you know, if you're driving today, look to your left, look to your right. I imagine two out of the three cars, you're going to see someone distracted. We have a denser population. Environmental design and roadways haven't responded to that. More people want to walk and commute on bikes in this town. As a cyclist, I can tell you I'd spend about 4,000 miles a year throughout our city streets and surrounding regional area, and it is a dangerous place sometimes to be a cyclist or a jogger or to commute via any of those means. So I think it's all those things combined. It's people have shorter fuses post-pandemic. They're distracted. The folks who are jaywalking are distracted as well often. And again, it goes back to this isn't, there's just no one simple solution to this other than continued dialogue like this where we make folks aware. It's a traumatic experience for a family who's lost a loved one as a pedestrian, and also for the individual, you know, who's struck that person and taken their life.
I was reading, there was a great piece a couple of weeks ago in Slate Online about vehicle design being so much more dangerous these days. We have, you know, bigger trucks, a lot more of them on the road. They're much taller and can cause much more serious injuries because they just kind of basically cream people. Whereas, you know, with a smaller vehicle, you might end up on the hood with, you know, maybe even serious injuries, but not end up dead.
I totally agree, and that's often found a foundation of a lot of the studies is talking about just that. And you know, another interesting area that we haven't discussed that we're going to is autonomous vehicles and what that looks like, and when things go wrong and the technology doesn't work and there are collisions and fatalities. You know, Tucson can get safer today by anyone listening today by when the light turns green, look left, look right before you go. A lot of people are running traffic lights. Yellow doesn't mean go faster, as I often tell my wife and my son. It actually means to stop.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mean we don't get like the first 2 seconds of the red just as a free pass anymore?
No, yeah. No, you don't. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation around leading, you know, the green arrow and you know, our motorcyclist and again, vehicles. Just because you get the green arrow, I'd suggest you really take a look. Before that, you know, you make sure that intersection is going to be clear, but also pay attention to the cyclist and your pedestrians, because although, you know, you might have the right of way, they might be distracted or vice versa, but this is an all hands on deck, you know, approach to Tucson and making Tucson street safer.
Then there's the whole, what you call spontaneous anger or road rage. Do not give somebody the middle finger.
Great segue, Bill. It really ties in our fatality
true.
Problem to her homicide problem, which the numbers are almost mirror each other. And, you know, 26 people in our community could still be alive today if they had just chose to go the other way when another party created conflict with them. And what we're totally seeing from, a post-pandemic era is it used to be there was some type of casual or intimate relationship with two parties before there was a homicide. And what we're seeing that's trending across the country is with fuses being shorter, as more and more individuals who have never met each other before are having what appears to start as an initial very, you know, could have been ended, you know, 20 years ago with a fist fight or some swearing at each other and walking away. They're now resulting in somebody pulling out a firearm and deploying lethal force against another human being over road rage or simple things.
Dispute over a spark. Yeah, the parking spaces.
Absolutely. So, and four of those were road rage deaths in our own community last year.
Question from Tom on the other side of the glass. Tom asks, are there going to be more Michigan left turn intersections?
Certainly a conversation in environmental design with the new director of transportation, Sam, that we're going to be having conversation about. But this is the only real solution here is we have to really evaluate our road engineering and lighting. Mm-hmm. We've celebrated dark skies in this town for a long time with our love of space and the University of Arizona. But there's certainly technology that exists today where the lighting, you can have a well-lit roadway that doesn't impede and oversaturate the night skies.
And that new transportation director will be my guest Thursday of next week at noon.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Okay, Dylan, anything you want to say before I talk about our favorite bakery?
Actually, I'm kind of hungry right now.
All righty.
Are we going to head up there real quick on the break?
Yeah, we're going to talk and head up to
Mona's. We might have to speed.
We'll
won't go
Danish
in Elberton.
Bakery. How about you, Chief? Do you like something sweet?
That's my vice.
There you go. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open for breakfast Tuesday through Sunday at 6:30. And they're doing lunch right now, or if you still want breakfast, not a problem. Check it out. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website, and there are some beautiful color photos of pretty much everything on the menu to tempt you, or just walk into the bakery and then you'll have your big decision. What do I want from the bakery case? It looks all so good, and it is. Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back with Chief Kazmar after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Chad Kazmar is here, the chief of the Tucson Police Department, joining us. He's been the chief since last December the 7th. Dylan Smith is the chief over at TucsonSentinel.com.
I don't have a cool badge, though.
No, you don't. A lot is said about what's called community policing, Chief Kazmar, and I know that City of Tucson participated with some other sites in a study on the effects of a procedural justice in policing. How is that different from community policing? Or is it pretty much the same thing?
No, I think they are a little different. Okay. I think what we, when we talk about community-oriented policing, I think that's just in how you engage with a community. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of an oversimplification for Tucson, being that we have very different parts of our community. I've worked in every geographic location the last almost 22 years in the city, and every community wants a little bit different type of interaction with their police department or their division. We have four different operational divisions, so it's almost like having four many not so small size police departments throughout our city: Operations Division, South, West, Midtown, and the East Side. So everybody, you know, it's a little bit different. And as we know too, as you travel through Tucson, the types of houses and apartments and population density, all those things change, and the roads change as well. So it's really evolved. Community-oriented policing has really evolved, and when we talk about procedural justice, you know, that's about treating people fairly. And being transparent when things don't go, we don't have the outcome that we all want. But there's certainly a component of a procedural justice for a community, and there's also a version of procedural justice for the staff that wears a badge or works for the police department.
Dylan Smith with us here. Go ahead, Dylan.
Kind of on that topic, TPD's been nationally recognized over the past couple of years for some big changes that you've made in the wake of basically the cover-up of a couple of deaths that were in custody, the Sentinel Event Review Board process, and now you recently started working with all the other agencies across the county in that what's the name of it?
Pima Regional Critical Incident Team. Not roll off the tip of your tongue.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how all that's working out.
Well, so I was here for the two in custody death investigations, and certainly understand why you and some of the members of the community feel like there was a cover up, and really, really evaluating how we could learn from that process and move forward. So the Sentinel Event Review Board was really a 5-year progression. What started as a board of inquiry, which was a very standard police department size. You had a you know, city attorneys, you had department members, and you did a review about administrative policy. And what evolved over 5 years became the Sentinel Event Review Board, where we brought in outside moderators and academia with community members, people of color, at subject matter experts in both mental health and in our ERs that could all provide perspective. But we also had members of the department, training staff, and labor. And that was a little bit unique as well to have. And everybody in our Sentinel Event Review process has an equal vote. It operates off a model of consensus. So it means if, you know, 10, you know, Dylan, it was your idea and I'm at a 1, you've got to get me to 6 to have consensus, yeah, and vice versa. And it really, you know, what we learned through the process is you have to do the criminal review, which is standalone, and an administrative review before you can do the Sentinel Event Review, because Sentinel events are about, what do we learn? How can we reflect and go, okay, we made decisions within seconds and moments, or you have a complete system failure like we did that summer, and really dissecting how we make sure we attempt to not have that happen again.
And now with the cooperative investigations, basically you have, if you have a death that involves TPD, then Pima County will investigate it rather than you doing your own criminal investigation of it?
Yeah, so we started this in March, and I want to give credit to Chief Riley in Oro Valley and Sheriff Nanos for having the brainchild, and this really evolved from legislative conversation last year, again, in response to the murder of George Floyd, to look at, okay, should we have police doing their own criminal investigations or the ultimate use of force, which is, you know, lethal force by firearm? And I think that was the stimulus for the conversation. But we launched, they quickly got the surrounding 10 agencies to say, hey, yeah, let's get in front of this conversation. Really, it made sense to start working together. It takes a lot of collaboration. It launched in March, and we're a primary investigative role in a criminal matter involving the Sheriff's Department, and they're primary on two of our officer-involved shootings. So we're starting out with officer-involved shootings, and then it evolved from there, because getting all of these really big organizations to work together, deploy together, and we all have different operating procedures. And the county, while under Sheriff Nanos' leadership, has rolled out the body more cameras, they're still getting used to all of the camera footage that we have and how that impacts their investigations.
You know, I was thinking about violent crime. Violent crime is up everywhere, pretty much every major city across the country, Chief Kazmarn. You were saying that, you know, would love to have 1,200 officers out there. You said you'd even like to have a lot more. I wonder if we were at, say, a full component, what kind of difference that would make?
It's hard to say. There's certainly studies for and against that. I meet with community, and there's some on an abolished scale which want this system shut down and a new system created. And then there's other studies that show the more police officers you have, the less crime that you have. The stance that we're taking is we have to work as smart as we can with the resources that we have. So that starts with an analytical team that develops intelligence on where we're experiencing most of the crime. And that's evolved into something called the Police Network Investigations, which is a collaboration. We're one of seven different departments using this program throughout the country. And it really, what it evolves, it's the evolution of a couple things. Professionalizing positions within police departments and better understanding data. It's the evolution of community-oriented policing, where community is part of a board that tells us how they feel about their neighborhood or their environment and where they're experiencing crime. And you marry all of these things, including with officers that are out in the field, and then you come up with strategy to be more intentional about who are the individuals within. There's always a small group of individuals in a larger area that are responsible for the majority of the crime.
You had the pandemic where people were very angry, and you also had the economic issues that are really coinciding, I think, with coming out of the pandemic. You've got inflation running at a 40-year high. People are very frustrated about not only many of them with health situation, but economically. It's a complex picture, isn't it, Chief?
Bill, I couldn't have said it better myself. And the reality is poverty is an underlying contributing factor. And people are struggling in this country, and people are struggling in our own community. Yeah, I think the average median household income is about $44,000 a year. The good news is you can become a community service officer and come work for us and be the breadwinner in your house. A mm-hmm. Little bit of a hiring plug there. But yeah,
for a community.
Yeah. So as we're talking service. And trying to address and mm-hmm. balance while we stabilize and rebuild our commission mm-hmm. Ranks, we're also expanding and building upon something we call a community service officer, which is a team member that's a professional staff. They don't have lethal force tools and they deploy after a modified academy experience at the age of 18 and above. They go out and they do community service work. And they peel off calls for service that don't require somebody with a badge and a gun to go do. And we're certainly every day continuing to evaluate how to expand that program and develop it and to decrease the workload for the commission staff. And, you know, we're authorized 87. We have we're about 9 shy of capacity with 25 individuals in training. But I'm trying to normalize the department size in the future of about 900 commissioned and 300 CSOs, which I think is a realistic, you know, 1 to 3 year goal.
Are the CSOs who I would see typically if a stoplight malfunctions, would they go out and direct the traffic and freeing up maybe a line officer?
So currently that would be one of the roles that they do, Bill. They also could take a burglary over, but we're looking to expand the type of work that they could do. I mean, there's a lot of conversation in this country around a co-responder model or putting mental health resources out for calls for service. Well, there's a version of that within the department that I have control over with mayor and council and city manager support, where I can say, hey, I can really expand this role. We respond right now, and if there's a death in a house and there's nothing suspicious, you know, you're going to call 911 and we're going to come and we're going to help you facilitate that experience. And that doesn't need to be a police officer. We're certainly going to build the ranks. I think there's a future where we have professional staff CSO supervisors and mid-level managers. And we also expand that role into our investigative rank as well.
Here's Dylan.
I had a question to follow up on that, and then I think Bill kind of stole it away from me about that, you know, what kinds of things are the CSOs doing? But maybe along with that, you know, there's been so much talk past couple of years about, you know, defund the police and, you know, have you guys do things differently. Is it a good idea, and I think I can predict your answer, but, you know, I want to push you on it a little bit. Is it a good idea to have people who are, you know, the mental health responders be a part of the police department and not be a part of some other agency?
Dylan, I don't think there's a one-size that fits all response. About 2 years ago, we asked for 8 social service providers. It was about the time, though, of George Floyd. Mm-hmm. So obviously, I think elected officials across the country were not looking to increase budget capacity for police departments and evaluating would that be in the appropriate place for that type of resource to exist. We have 3 different teams that we deploy. The mental health support team, we call it MIST, and the homeless outreach team, we call HOT. and a substance misuse resource team. We call it CERT. Definitely easier than PRCIT to roll off the tip of your tongue. And what those units do is they proactively, you know, take an approach for folks who are in mental health crisis or they're living in an unsheltered environment for either substance misuse or their mental health issues or a combination of both. But I'm excited, and Dylan, I know you covered the story under the Community Safety, Health, and Wellness program and launch from mayor and council. And one of the reasons I'm such a supporter of what that program could be under in its launch is that police departments across the country and communities haven't really figured out where you know, we still recognize police departments are often the bucket or the resource that goes to someone in crisis. So how do we get to a world where we don't want that to be the default bucket? And Community Safety, Health, and Wellness provides a platform for the expansion of those resources or a better organizing of the community resources that we have to decrease that workload on my staff.
Especially when you get a call about a crisis, you're not quite sure exactly what that is. Does it need someone who has a badge and a gun? Does it need someone who, you know, is a counselor? How do you determine that? Is that somebody who needs to be over at the 911 center triaging things a little bit more accurately?
You're helping me with my interview here, so that you stole the answer off of my tongue now. And it's a good outcome start in communications. So at our Mercy Communications Center, we're happy to report, not at the scale that I would like, but Sharon McDonough's working on it, is scaling our Arizona Complete Health resources where calls can be triaged out of the 911 center and evaluated where we don't need a police response here. This is just someone in crisis. They're perfectly happy with a field clinician coming out, and we do a lot of that type of work. There's also work where we do a co-response model where we go and we make the scene safe. But, you know, we have other situations, Dylan, where, you know, somebody has a weapon or they have a knife and they're out in public, and we can't just leave that person alone, and it's not a safe environment to send a clinician into until we can make that environment safe. So it's really complex, and it's, I would say, and I've been in the news talking about it, we have to focus on front-end issues as well, not just the middle of this conversation or back-end problems. And, you know, when somebody's in crisis or somebody's addicted to fentanyl or methamphetamine, there's front-end services that we really need to focus investment before there's a system failure and 911 is called.
And we will have Sharon McDonough with us 3 weeks from today. The new 911 director will be joining us for our Friday Focus interview. Chief, what is this active bystander in law enforcement training? I understand TPD is the first department in the state to roll this out.
So there's two programs that launched towards the end of last year under Chief Magnus, and I've continued the commitment for. One is ABLE, and effectively, Bill, what it is it's a see something, say something. It's recognizing maybe we can't unprogram human beings from being human beings in a 9-month police academy or through their careers. We are human beings and have emotional responses that we get paid to measure and to behave accordingly, and 99% of the time we do. So the event that you see of Dylan and I, Dylan's my partner, and we're going for a call for service, and he's come to work with some, you know, life troubles like we all have, and he hasn't fully parked those in the briefing room. And I see Dylan being a little more short-tempered than normal. I'm going to pull Dylan aside and say, hey, Dylan, are you doing okay today? And, you know, maybe let me run point. Or it's a use of force situation and I need to put a shoulder in to say, Dylan, I got it. And really taking an attitude of when we take a critical look at some of our system failures or our officers being human beings is, okay, was it preventable? Could we have jumped in and said something to, you know, intervene and say, hey, go take a break, go take a walk, I got this. And that's a little bit of the foundation of ABLE. The second part that we've also launched a program, and we're the only West Coast Police Department working with Boulder Crest on a program called Struggled Well, which is a week-long intensive program, is to recognize that as human beings, we grow up with trauma. I certainly had it in my family. I had an amazing family growing up, but we had alcoholism, we had substance misuse, we had domestic violence, trauma, lots of trauma. And so you grow up with these experiences. And then you become a police officer. And police officers see 90% more trauma than the average human being. So when you stack all these things together, and we have not invested in our human beings, our employees, like we should, bad things happen. And we shouldn't be surprised about that. So, you know, I tell people, if we graph out post George Floyd, increase expectations for police officers, boom, they'd skyrocket. And then you graph out policy and expectations from police leadership, boom, it would skyrocket. And then you graph another line of investment in training, you'd have a huge gap. And we got to do better across the country, and we got to do better in our own community here.
There is no normal family out there, Chief, right?
Absolutely. In fact, we've all got our normal issues, right?
We all have our issues.
Yeah.
Before we wrap it up, for the Academy and along those lines, about there is a psych evaluation, and I assume it's a pretty thorough psychiatric evaluation for the new officers, isn't there?
There is, not just for our police officers, for our community resource officers and our professional staff. And I'll be candid with you. So you have to take a polygraph and you have to take a psych per Arizona Post requirements, but you don't necessarily have to pass those. And I get the final say as a chief of police in my own jurisdiction. And if I want to disagree with one, Arizona Post gets to evaluate my position on it. But I would tell you this, and it was an area of conversation we had while I was a director over communications, and in my opinion, we were eliminating really good recruits. So if we apply a lens of equity and we look at life experiences, or maybe somebody grew up in an environment where they didn't have all the support that they needed as a young adult, or made some decisions because they didn't have the resources that someone else had, you have to evaluate that. And that's a lens of equity. And sometimes the issues with polygraphs and psychological examinations in this country look for a pattern of previous behaviors and indicator of future behavior. And it doesn't really overlay at a level that I think we should in this country, a lens of equity and a lens of life experiences. So we're going to keep pushing and having that conversation as a regional public safety team down here and try to continue to influence conversations up at the state.
On that real quick topic of equity, a couple of questions kind of raises the point of, if some young adult has gotten in trouble with the law a couple of times over some stupid things, and they weren't able to afford a good lawyer, and progressed down to getting them a conviction, versus somebody who grew up middle class and had a good lawyer and has a clean record. How do you handle that? And we chatted a little bit during one of the breaks about how you're handling people who have had marijuana use in their backgrounds. That's legal now. And is it fair to have somebody who smoked a joint last year not be able to be a cop?
Real quickly, please, Chief.
Real quickly. I think we need to continue. We're not where we need to be on those conversations, and we need to continue to have those. The good part is I have the final say. So if you know someone that meets Dylan's example, I'd say send them our way if they're interested in being a police officer, a community service officer, or one of our professional team members, and let's have a conversation about those experiences. The same with tattoos. We've expanded that policy, and we are looking for folks that have life experience, and that's what makes well-rounded police officers.
All right, Chief Kazmar, congratulations on your new posting as chief of the Tucson Police Department. And we have you on the schedule for June, so we'll have a return visit, see how you're doing a couple of months from now.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Dylan, stick around. I have a couple
Indeed.
Of quick words for you after we take the break in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We thank Chief Chad Kazmar, the new, relatively new police chief, Dylan Smith. We had a great conversation, and the chief's going to come back in June, so we'll see how he's doing in a couple of months.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenging position right now, given the budget challenges, staffing challenges, and just some of the crazy things that are going on in the world out there.
Dylan Smith is with us. He is the editor, publisher, and founder of TucsonSentinel.com, Tucson's online news service. Dylan, questions remain about the secret retirement of the 29-year ex-head of Pima County bureaucracy. And, of course, since you broke that story, you and your team at TucsonSentinel.com, there are these still the questions that remain, and the board met on Tuesday to go over in an open setting, in a public setting, some questions about Mr. Huckleberry's retirement. But those, what are some of the kind of the big ones, the big questions that you still have?
Well, what interests me and why I've kept digging into this after we broke the story was just, not just the question of who knew what when. I think that's, for the most part, fairly obvious. It's a fact that Chuck Huckleberry told a very small number of his staff what was going on and told them not to tell anybody about it. And things were handled, not in writing, which doesn't seem to quite follow Pima County normal procedures. But he didn't want anybody to know what was going on, including his bosses, the Board of Supervisors.
But then that puts those employees in a very difficult position. The boss says, don't say anything, and if then you're going to go say something, it could put your own
future. Be fired for that. So it's kind of hard to, fault them, if you're way down the totem pole and someone says, don't say anything about this. But it was so closely held that some of the normal Pima County HR reports were never updated, even in the middle of March. This March, there was a report, internal report that was leaked to us showing that Huckleberry was still listed as a full-time employee working 40 hours a week, and that certainly was not the case. He was retired. He had been switched, not on paper, but switched to being paid for just 19 hours a week, and then wasn't working at all, of course, because he was in that terrible accident and hospitalized for quite a long time. So it just demonstrates how, hush-hush this was, and that sort of attitude continued even after Huckleberry was no longer employed by the county. There were still documents that I had to push and push and push to get the county bureaucrats to turn over. Like the fact that he's being paid, will be paid over years, $1 million more than we had previously known.
What was that? $1 million?
Well, part of his contract for a long time was that he was, you know, paying extra into the Arizona State Retirement System. And now he's being paid that back out. It's, you know, legal on the level. But the fact that there was a letter from the retirement system to Pima County officials sent in November saying, hey, you know, Chuck Huckleberry paid $1.1 million in extra, and you guys need to pay that back at $10,000 a month. So his retirement isn't what we thought it was with the $12,200 a month. There's another $10,000, or some recent checks have shown it to be another $8,500 a month being paid out to him. I would take either of those amounts. I don't need both. I'll take $12,000 a month, or, you know, $10,000 a month.
So
put
I
them
suppose
together. It's a pretty handsome retirement package.
It is. It's quite a payday, isn't it, Dylan? And of course, we haven't heard from Mr. Huckleberry about any of this because we don't really know his condition after that horrible accident.
It seems like he's doing better from the things I've been told and, you know,
good,
piecing together,
so
talking from folks. But he's certainly not in the position, you know, he wanted to go back to work, but he's not in the kind of shape that it would, you know, allow him to return as the, you know, much more than 40-hour-a-week job that running Pima County is.
Well, keep digging, my friend. And
indeed.
Our listeners and your readers and online folks looking at TucsonSentinel.com online will be hopefully the first to know when you know.
You bet.
Thank you, Dylan. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. Take care, everybody.
All right. Weekend Watch coming up next with Mr. Matt Russell.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Ah, the music signaling stir it up to stir into a beautiful weekend. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. They're getting excited about the return of the Blues Festival over the Memorial Day weekend. You can find out all about it and about where to stay and so many other things to do. Great outdoor activities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. So go to southwestnewmexico.org for more information. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, inside Tucson business food and beverage columnist, dedicated foodie, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. Stirring it up and shaking it up and doing what I do on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, and I understand you're very excited about the Delta. What's going on over there?
I absolutely am. You might remember, Bill, I introduced the Delta to your listeners when they first opened back in January with a limited menu that gave us all just kind of a tease for what was coming. Well, the moment has arrived for the reveal of their big and bold menu that they say represents Southern hospitality with a healthy dose of spirited swagger. Now, some of the new menu items include monsoon oysters served with a creosote mist that delivers a summer in Tucson sort of fragrance. There's a queso birria burger made with beef birria from Tucson's El Taco Rustico, plus some crazy new sandwiches and salads and desserts like the Twix pie with house-made peanut butter. Do yourself a favor and do the Delta this weekend. It's on 6th Avenue, just a little bit south of Broadway.
How about the beer lovers? Anything on tap for them?
After a 2-year hiatus, the annual Baja Beer Festival is back. It's tomorrow at 1 o'clock at a new location this year in the remodeled plaza, just on the north side of the TCC downtown. You can sample beers from Arizona's best breweries and food from our local chefs. That's going to be there available for purchase as well. More than 30 breweries are going to be on hand serving their best suds. So whether you're a fan of ales or lagers or IPAs or sours or anything in between, you're not going to leave thirsty. Get your tickets now at chooseazbrews.com.
What's this about a new restaurant?
Well, business continues to boom, Bill, on the new restaurant scene. This week saw the opening of a place called Nudie's that's serving up imaginative expressions of pasta, Italian-inspired sandwiches, gelato, even a dish which they called pasta fries, which are basically French fries, topped with a choice of sauces like bolognese or vodka, tomato basil, finished with melted cheese. Their meat-packed subs and grinders are making news themselves. Nudie's is at 1730 East Speedway, most definitely worthy of a Weekend Watch mention.
Boy, what a healthy restaurant environment we have evolving here. How about Inside Tucson Business? What are you writing about this week?
Yeah, you know, I often wonder when I sit down with this guy, how does a local chef who's renowned for thinking big prepare for a food competition that requires participants to think small? You know, on its face, it doesn't compute, so you have to read my column to understand it is in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Good eating to you, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
All right. We love having Matt Russell with us with Weekend Watch. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. That organization is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music is composed by Christophon. You will hear his music at the beginning of each of our Buckmaster shows. A real fine German composer that I met about 5 or 6 years ago, and he's doing great things. Rosemary Brandt, my assistant, making sure the podcasts are up in a very timely fashion. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing, always doing a great job. Everybody here at Bustos Media Tucson, thank you, and have a lovely weekend.